Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Francavilla Show. I'm your host, Dr. Carolyn Francavilla, board-certified family physician and diplomate of the American Board of Obesity Medicine. I've been helping patients lose weight to treat and prevent medical problems for the last 10 years, and I'm taking what I've learned from them to you. In this podcast, you will learn the science behind why you struggle with your weight and what to do about it, tips for common challenges, work to fight bias about what a healthy weight really is, and improve your relationship with food and your body. Please remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. This podcast is meant to be informational in nature only, not medical advice. Please seek out care from your physician for your specific needs. Okay, let's get started. Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Dr. Francavilla Show. Today, I have a guest with me, Dr. Courtney Younglove, and we are talking about really some groundbreaking material here, some information that was published in the journal Nature, which is like a big, big deal, and it talks about some new potential causes of obesity. And so we are going to talk about this today and like, what does this mean? What are the different models of what is causing people to gain weight over the last several decades? So a little bit about my lovely guest. Dr. Courtney Younglove is a physician and she is board certified in obesity medicine as well as obstetrics and gynecology. She has been practicing clinical medicine for almost 25 years and earned her fellowship from the Obesity Medicine Association in 2021. Dr. Younglove is incredibly passionate about making evidence-based treatments accessible to all patients who struggle with the disease of obesity as a way to improve health and decrease healthcare costs. Dr. Younglove is the founder and medical director of Heartland Weight Loss, an insurance-based obesity medicine practice with clinics in Overland Park, Kansas, and Lawrence, Kansas. She's also the chief medical officer of Journeys Metabolic, a solution for tackling our metabolic health crisis at scale, and the founder of WellMe, a point solution bringing obesity medicine directly to employers. Dr. Younglove, you may be one of the people out there who is doing more than I am. Like, that is crazy. You're doing a lot of different things.
I'm busy. Yes.
And you're making a huge impact in the world of obesity and weight. So thank you for all that you're doing. And thank you for taking a little bit of your time to talk about this topic today, because this is, I think, you know, it has been such an exciting time for those of us who have a passion for helping people lose weight, because we've had new medications come out. And this is shifting the discussion, this article that came out about what is the cause of obesity. And so before we get into that today, I want to ask you, how did you get involved in the field of obesity medicine and helping people lose weight? What was your journey to get here? I think that's always a great place to start.
Well, and it ties into what we're talking about today. So yes, I started in obstetrics and gynecology, loved that field, started there in the early 2000s, right as this obesity epidemic was taking off. And it was so obvious how much this played into obstetrics and gynecology. I mean, pregnancy rates declined. Pregnancy complications went up. We were doing way more inductions. We did more C-sections. There were more complications. There were more problems with all kinds of gynecologic problems. I mean, it just kept circling back to, at the time we were just calling it obesity. We've kind of evolved to the idea that it's metabolic disease. But at the time we just kept circling back to what is happening. And so I started looking into, okay, so what do we do about this obesity thing? I mean, none of us knew. We looked at each other and shook our heads. And that got me into the field of obesity medicine, got board certified there, really started trying to pull that science into my role as an obstetrician. But I was a really busy obstetrician and the obstetrics just kept coming in front of everything. And I just felt pulled in two directions. And the field of obesity medicine was just taking off at the time. And there was so much data coming out. So I finally decided I had to pick. And I quit my job as an obstetrician and hung a shingle and said, I'm going to practice obesity medicine full time and just do this thing. And the rest is history. So it just transitioned. I did both for a little while. And then it just has been obesity medicine since then.
Yeah. Well, good for you and amazing starting your own practice. I know how hard that is. And, you know, what you're saying highlights what so many of the physicians on the show said is, we were looking at our patients and we were like, what is like the underlying thing here that I can do something about? And just that curiosity of how do we solve this metabolic syndrome that really just seems to be getting worse and more prevalent. More and more people are being affected by this. And while there's more and more solutions that keep coming out, I personally have felt a little unsatisfied with our previous explanations of why there has been this obesity epidemic. And so that's what we're going to dive into today, is this sort of, again, groundbreaking thought shift in what some of the reasons for this epidemic may be. So if you can help me outline, what are, especially as detailed in this article, and the one I'm referencing is, it's called Obesogens, A Unifying Theory for Global Rise in Obesity. And we'll see if we can put a link in the show notes for this article if you guys want to do some like really deep dive into the science. But if you don't, then Dr. Dunlove and I are going to break this down for you today. So in this, it talks about four theories of why this obesity epidemic is occurring. So can you help me run through what those four models of causing of obesity is?
Sure. So at a high level, I think it obviously starts with the one that's been the most prevalent, that energy balance hypothesis that really carried us for a long time, that never seemed very solid, that eat less, move more. People are gaining weight because they're eating too much and moving too little. And I mean, I'm sure you know, taking care of patients with obesity, I don't think we have a collective lack of willpower or drive or morality, you know, causing this. It never seemed to fit right. I think the only ones really holding tight to that model are the ones that really are invested in making profit off that model, you know?
And so that's basically saying that this obesity epidemic has occurred because people are eating too much and they're not moving as much, right? And that the solution, therefore, is to eat less and to move more.
Yes. Yes. And I thankfully there's been this carbohydrate insulin model that came out, really shoved a little bit of that down and said, hey, there's a lot more to this. That was proposed a while back, I think mostly by Ludwig, but there's been some, you know, a lot of papers written about the carbohydrate insulin model, really saying that the excess weight gain is a result of insulin stimulation, this hormone that promotes fat storage. And so stimulation of insulin is a chronic promoter of fat storage, which then triggers hunger, kind of working upstream of the problem, which I think definitely has a lot more basis in science.
You know, so our second model, again, and these have been sort of the two that have been battling for like, I don't know, about the last decade, which is it's energy in, energy out versus this carbohydrate or carb and insulin model, and that this insulin resistance is really the underlying cause. But that left me with the question of like, why do so many people have insulin resistance now, right? Some of it made sense. I would see patients and their whole family had always had diabetes, right? Everyone got diabetes when they got older. And like, okay, like this is genetic. But then I would meet other people where it just didn't add up. And then I would have other patients where they also just didn't have insulin resistance, right? We would test it every which way. They had zero signs of insulin resistance. They were exercising every day. They were eating a generally normal, healthy diet, and something just didn't add up, right? I was like, neither of these models explain why you're struggling with your weight.
Right. And so these other two have kind of been floating there under the surface, but this really brought them in and integrated them into one. One of them is this theory of obesogens. And I think there's a lot of us in this field that have been saying for a while, something's wrong, right? Something's happening in the field of obstetrics. I will tell you, there's, you know, we know when a woman has obesity and then she has an offspring, that offspring is at higher risk of having obesity, even if it lives outside of her home the rest of its life, right? And these offspring have a higher...
It's not because of the lifestyle of that family, right? Well, you know, adopted or taken care of by another family, they still... struggle with obesity, regardless of how they're raised.
Right. There's some of that. And then you start looking at all of these things. And this obesogenic model is very comprehensive. And good Lord, there's a paper with like 44 authors that was published last year, 2 years ago, that goes into all of them. But, you know, we know that glyphosate is an obesogen. It causes fat cells to multiply, right? We know that some of these things that were in baby bottles, that some of these things are in fragrances, you know, we call them endocrine disrupting chemicals. We called them that for a while. And some of these endocrine disrupting chemicals predispose fat cells to grow. So exposure to those in utero, in early childhood development, that really we've got a lot of papers saying these things are causing fat storage, raising of insulin, right? Excess reactive oxygen species, things that really are in that process of fat storage. And I think it's really exciting that we can bring that to a head and say, you know what, maybe there's more to it.
Right. So starting to find these other explanations. So this is this other sort of model that's been proposed that interacts with the first two, right? It kind
It
of
interacts. Yes, it's not
explains
by itself.
why calories in, calories out is being disrupted and explains potentially why this insulin and this much more complicated than insulin alone hormonal system might be being disrupted. And that is that there are these environmental triggers that we may be exposed to before we're born, exposed to in childhood, and then we continue to be exposed to throughout our life. So, you know, you kind of touched on this, but I think this is a newer concept for most people. And so obesogens, what we're saying is that there are things we're exposed to, chemicals, and sometimes natural things, viruses, other things in our environment that are triggering obesity, right? It's not just about what we're eating and drinking and what we're doing with our bodies. There are outside forces that seem to be triggering this at a cellular level. And that's what these obesogens are.
Or at least getting us closer to that edge, right? So that it doesn't take very much for that insulin model to kick in, or, you know, right? There's all those shifts are happening.
This term multifactorial, right? Which is like a fancy way of saying like it's a combination of things, right?
Like,
because obviously a lot of people are exposed to these things and may not have the same genetic predisposition for this to trigger it. But it looks like a lot of us like do have that predisposition for some of these environmental things may be triggering things. So I think it's a little overwhelming when we start to think about what some of these obesogens are. So, you know, looking at this article, it's like, I'm holding it up. If you're watching this on YouTube, like this is like the list of things that like they talk about it could be, but you know, bisphosphonyl A, which is something I think we've all heard of that was in a lot of plastics, right? This BPA that has now been taking out phthalates, PFAs, fructose, non-nutritive sweeteners, methyl and butyl parabens, tween 80 carboxycellulose, 3-BHA, MSG, maybe red 40, maybe yellow 5 and 6, pesticides, and then other things like metals in our environment, viruses, pesticides, insecticides, household chemicals. Like it's kind of overwhelming list of things that could be affecting our health.
Right. And I think it's when are we exposed, right? And what's the dose and what's the, you know, and then it's all that predisposition too. And as, the way I explain it to patients a lot is, you know, if 10 of us lined up on my roof and jumped off, some people might land just fine.
That's
right?
A good
I'd
way
probably
to think
break
of it.
An ankle because I have weak ankles, right? Somebody might hurt their back. Somebody might bonk their knees and hit their head. Like everyone's going to have a different reaction to that same event because we all have our own kind of, you know, vulnerabilities that exist differently based on who we are.
That's a great analogy. I'm going to steal that for sure. That's a great analogy because And I always tell people as well, that's why I have a job as a physician because people's bodies don't always follow the rules, right? Mm-hmm. People have very different experiences with the same thing. We see that with something as simple, not simple, but as common as COVID, right? I mean, people die from COVID, people don't have symptoms with COVID, right? Like there's a very different and everything in between. People have symptoms forever from COVID, right? So, you know, for any particular thing that affects our body, people are going to have very different experiences with that. So maybe that makes us feel a little better that we're not all going to die from all these chemicals in our environment. I find it a little overwhelming when we start diving into all the things that, you know, people have been exposed to over the last several decades that are probably impacting our health.
Right. Although I think I hear from a lot of people that this is just in my genetics, which is a very passive victim idea that I can't change this. And to me, this gives us some agency of, you know what, if we know things, we can do things about it. And that's the beauty of knowledge, right? We might not be able to change what you and I were exposed to when we were in utero, but what can we do for the moms that get pregnant next year, right? What can we do? And can we minimize future insults knowing that we've already had an insult potentially? I mean, I think you can do a lot with information.
Like what we can do, there's one other model that they talk about in this article. So they say like this, you know, calories in, calories out model, or the carbohydrate insulin model, this obesogen model. And then there's this energy reduction oxidation model, or the redox model.
Yes.
Which is, I'm going to try to simplify this, but there's really complicated biochemistry behind this. But essentially, there's these little parts of our cells called mitochondria. They're the powerhouses of our cell. They're sort of what create cellular energy, or what's called ATP. And when they are overloaded, when there's too much energy or fuel sources for them in the body, they create these reactive oxygen species, which they go on and trigger all these different reactions in the body that are, a pretty deep level of biochemistry to get into. But that disorder and constantly overloading with too much fuel, these mitochondria create these reactive oxygen species, or ROS, that, also disrupt this system further and further, disrupt our sort of energy balance. That's the best I can explain this at that time. Do you have anything to add to sort of that model of how cellular biochemistry is also impacting people's weight gain?
I mean, biochemistry is really fun, but very hard to explain without right. Lots and lots of lines and circles.
Here's the picture if you want to see it. It's complicated.
that we have these processes going, but then they start spinning off. Yeah, these kind of toxic byproducts. And these toxic byproducts have to do something, right? I mean, they have to do something. They can't just sit there. So they can disrupt a lot of things. Yes.
And I'll read a summary line from the article where it says, excess fuel stimulates the reactive oxygen species, leading to insulin secretion, which is the carbohydrate insulin model, and then promoting fat storage and altering appetite, which is the energy balance model. And then when we add this link of these obesogens sort of triggering this whole process, this is where they say, okay, now we can unify all four of these causes and really kind of look at the root cause of what's probably been causing this obesity epidemic for the world.
Right.
All right. So now that we got sort of some of the science out of the way here, what do we do with this information, Dr. Younglove? Like, how do we apply this, not just as doctors, but, for someone who's listening to this podcast, they're like, that's a lot of new information. How does this change my life? How does this change what we should be doing as people or as a society?
I mean, I think the biggest one is what a lot of us in our field have said for a long time is this is not our fault, right? Like, let's really change the dialogue that having obesity is not a fault issue. We've got to remove the morality out of it and start treating it like a disease, right? There's lots of things that contribute to the disease of lung cancer. We treat that disease regardless of, what those things are. Really kind of use that to say, I mean, thankfully there's things that we can do about it, but really not blaming the individual. I think all of us in our field are fighting for that. And I think this just even solidifies that. Let's get rid of the bias. Let's just start treating the disease.
I love that, because exactly what you said, like, we don't need an excuse to treat any other medical condition, right? If you have lung cancer, we treat the lung cancer, right? If you have, a sinus infection, we treat the sinus infection, right? We're not judging or blaming, but for some reason, when it comes to obesity, there's been this socially acceptable, like, blaming the person. And I agree that I think one of the most powerful things from this is, like, look, there's science that this is not within someone's control. There's really complex biochemistry that is happening that is out of people's control. And, like, let's just treat the problem instead of, like, blaming people, which doesn't change anything.
Right. And let's not go back and blame the moms that we did things when we were pregnant or we exposed our, I mean, I would never want that to have happened, right?
Right. Mom guilt as it is, right? Yeah. Like we were all exposed to this. Like, unless you moved to a desert island, which is probably not the best place to be pregnant, I wouldn't recommend
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
These things were unavoidable, right? Not like we were choosing to expose ourselves to BPA. We didn't know. We were given a water bottle. We were told to drink water, right?
Right. We were given baby bottles. It seemed like we cooked with Teflon because that was the thing to do. I mean, so I'd never want to use this to blame anyone, right? It's more of, yes, so now we know these things. What can we do differently? I think if you look at all those causes put together, I mean, a huge piece of the lifestyle change for prevention is going to be the same as treatment, is really changing the food supply in general, changing our dietary inputs. I mean, if we're trying to reduce insulin stimulation, then we really need to stop relying on foods that stimulate insulin most of the time, whether that's when we're growing a child or when we are a small child or when we're 40 or with excess weight. I mean, all of those things play a role. We know that the dietary shifts that we've had in the past 50 years are really hard, no matter what model we put that into.
Right, right. Like, like the one thing that we can correlate pretty well is the increase in processed and ultra-processed foods.
Right.
We're all eating less, as I like to say, quote, real food, right?
It's, right.
And
right.
whether and food is plant-based or animal-based or whatever, it's less real food.
And those staple crops that make most of our ultra-processed foods are heavily doused in pesticides and herbicides, right? And then they go through machinery, which is full of chemicals. They're heated up and then put into shapes, and then they're packaged in plastic and shipped through hot containers and stuck on shelves. So, I mean, I think these ultra processed foods, that just the things I can't pronounce, a lot of the things that are in there, I certainly couldn't tell you what they are. They're probably on that endocrine disrupting chemical list, or they're not because nobody studied them. So I think, yes, I mean, we go back to real food. Now, yes, there might be some pesticides on there. That's a bummer. But that's one versus 20 things in that one food item.
Yeah. So I did a podcast episode, gosh, it's maybe even been a year ago at this point, about ultra processed food, right? Because we had a lot of exciting information that was becoming a big deal a little while ago about, okay, there people who are eating ultra processed food seem to gain weight disproportionate to the amount of calories they're eating, right? If you and I eat the same calories and macronutrients of I'm eating all real food and you're eating ultra processed food, it's the same macronutrients, same calories, the energy breakdown's the same, you will gain weight over the course of a couple of weeks and I will lose weight, right? We're eating the same thing, or it's, you know, tailored for what we need for our bodies. Like, that is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So we're trying
to explain. That Kevin Hall study. Yes. It's fantastic. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we're trying to explain, like, well, why is that exactly? And so there were discussions about the microbiome and insulin and all these other things. But I think this adds another
also
layer
play a role.
It's not actually even the food, right? Like, there's some other
things.
I think
it's all of it. Yes.
Yeah, it's like the packaging and some of the other stuff that may be contributing.
Yeah. And what are those endocrine disrupting chemicals? What are they doing to the microbiome? Because I do think that plays a big role.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just studying what happens to the whole human, and that's all of our different kinds of cells that we have. And then those trillions of microbiome cells, and they're all varied. So what is the effect on those? So I think it's very complicated, and I don't think we're going to solve it all by saying eat real food, but definitely that's going to help. I can't think of any scenario that that's not going to help the issue.
Always a reasonable intervention. You know, when I talk to my patients about nutrition or try to give general advice, I'm like, eating more veggies, like fresh veggies is like an easy, like, you probably can't go wrong with that intervention. Right. So yes, I think, but again, like that does have the risk of oversimplifying it, right? Where we're like, oh, well, if everyone just eats nothing but fresh fruits and veggies and beans and legumes and all these fresh foods, that's not going to solve this whole problem at this point.
No, it's a good start, though. You know,
it's a good start. It's not.
I would never not
you,
recommend. Right?
It's not going to hurt you. We would encourage it. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So I guess, like, what else? What do we do differently with this information? So we talked about, like, moving away from ultra processed food where we can, eating, you know, more real foods, watching chemicals in our environment. Like, what else do we do with this information? We don't blame ourselves. We realize that there's really complex physiology going on.
Right. I mean, I would say with this intersection of obstetrics and obesity, like, this is my place, right? This is where I would love to say, this is the time we really buckle down on preconception, conception, and early childhood, and let's protect these kids, right? This is the time we need food as medicine. These are the people that are absolutely the most vulnerable in that we have. It's hard to get these things if you're in a food desert. It's really hard. It's really hard when you're crazy busy, when you can't take unpaid time off to be with your kid after they're born because you have to go to work because you have to keep your health insurance. So you have to put that child with the neighbor. I mean, there's so much, I think, that it'll have to come down from a policy level, but these are our most vulnerable people. And I think we have to do more somehow. I think we have to reach them. You know, the pervasive idea when I was in obstetrics, I haven't delivered a baby now in 3 years, mid-COVID, the pervasive idea was, now that I'm pregnant, I can eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
Woo, that's about the last thing I would ever want to say to a pregnant woman. Like, now that you're pregnant, this is the best time in the world to do everything, right? But it's hard to do. So how do we support people as they do that?
Right.
Because how do we feed
you're
these
tired,
babies so much?
You don't feel well. And,
right.
You know, I will say for myself, it was the hardest time to
exhausting
to eat right, because I
yes.
had, especially my second pregnancy, I had
yes.
a toddler. My husband worked 4 nights a week.
Yes.
I was working full time. It is hard to feed yourself nutritious food sometimes when you're
It
pregnant.
is.
And then I felt terrible, right? Like, my body
Instantly.
was like, eat nothing but crackers and cheese, right? That's all it wanted. And so it is, like, you know, a time where I think it's such a great root cause. Like, we need to support women of childbearing age. We need to support
yeah.
them before they're pregnant, during their pregnancy. We need to, you
right
know,
afterwards.
Support them
yes.
while they're breastfeeding, so that they can do that and they can have access to, you know, the right foods during that time.
Right. And preconception as well. That's a harder, it's a moving target. So, you know, that's a much harder one to intervene in.
I think that's a good point. If there's a time to be more worried about some of these obesogens, which these things are also probably doing more than causing obesity, right? These are causing other health problems. We're
yeah.
just focused on obesity. That's our passion, but these are
right.
causing other health problems too. And if there was a time in life to be most focused on that, it's sort of before you have a baby and, like, while you're pregnant. And if
yeah.
you're 70 years old, like, these are probably not the things to focus on, right? Like, you know,
yeah, prioritize. Yes.
Right. Like, it is going to be a priority yeah. earlier in the life cycle. There may be a different priority.
And it is hard because these are prevention tactics. And in our American healthcare system, we just don't really focus a lot on prevention. We wait until the house is on fire to really worry about it. And this really involves a mindset shift of, we need to move way over here.
And the good news is, you know, although this is very exciting to start thinking about and start making change for generations to come, thankfully, we do have tools right now. So if someone's already been impacted and their metabolic
right.
system is already disrupted from these obesogens, again, whether it's a virus or whether
right.
it was something in their environment that they ate or chemical they were exposed to, otherwise things they were putting on their skin or something else, we do have solutions if you already have it, right? So
right.
we always try
right.
to prevent things. And then if you actually have the thing, thankfully we're at a place with weight where we have, like, some really good treatments at this point.
Right. And that's how I always try to separate. There's treatment and prevention. I mean, they're two radically different things that require two different strategies, right? Treating pregnancy and preventing pregnancy are radically different. Preventing cancer and treating cancer, radically different strategies, right? Most of the treatment ones also help, like, you know, stopping smoking is a good idea not to get lung cancer, but it's also helpful once you have it. I mean,
yeah.
it's not the treatment, but it's certainly
yeah.
in addition to the treatment. So it's not either or. There's definitely an overlap there, but yes, we
you
still have
amazing analogies, by the way. I love all your analogies, but that's a great one, right? Like,
I mean, they're just different.
Preventing pregnancy and treating pregnancy are different things. Yeah, that's true.
Yep. Yeah. They're both pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Women's health was very interesting. You know,
I've done a lot of podcasts on it. And, you know, I think women, we've been empowered sometimes in healthcare. So we need more, you know, tailored advice for what we need to do to take care of ourselves and sometimes the babies we're lucky enough to grow. Any final thoughts? That was a lot. It's a lot of new information. It's a new way of thinking about things, but anything that we didn't cover?
No, I think we covered kind of all four and how they come together. And we need to just start thinking about them kind of in that
sure.
complexity and
it's
lot pieces.
Complex.
And
it's complex.
Yeah.
It's not simple, right? And we just keep learning
yeah.
more and more complex. And it's not anyone's fault, right? It's not
right.
any one person's fault
right.
if they have been struggling with weight. It's really, really complicated.
Really. Yeah. So it would be nice if we could get that dialogue even more pervasive, right? Let's cover
yeah.
the treatments. Let's cover the interventions. Let's really work on getting rid of the bias.
If people want to connect or follow you, or where can they find you?
So I live on LinkedIn mostly. I'm not a big social media person, but I'm pretty active on my LinkedIn page, which I think is just Courtney Younglove.
Okay, we'll make sure that that's in the show notes. You do. You post great stuff on LinkedIn about all of this. So
it's a very good audience. And my role right now in my career, I think, is to really be pushing for policy change and conversations. And so I feel like that's a good place to move it forward. In terms of stuff for patients and kind of really teaching stuff, Heartland Weight Loss has a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page. We have a LinkedIn profile. Heartland Weight Loss is my clinic that's really designed for helping people as they navigate through this stuff instead of policy. So those are kind of two different places.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And until next week, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Dr. Francavilla Show, where we learn about all things related to weight and health. If you love this podcast, make sure to leave those 5-star reviews and share this podcast with a friend or loved one. If you have a topic about weight and health you want me to tackle, head over to the website, thedrfrancavillashow.com, to submit your question. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss next week's episode. Take care.